Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And today my guest has been within pediatrics for over 20 years. She is a certified pediatric nurse practitioner for 15 years. And I'm super excited to have her on the show today because I've been getting a lot of feedback from the community on, can you talk about how to treat children when we're dealing with Lyme disease? It's hard enough to treat an adult, right? But when we have children and children can't verbalize and communicate with us as well as we can as adults, it just makes so many things so much harder. And so I'm excited to have her on the show today so we can kind of dive into all the things that we need to look for when we're dealing with children. And do they actually have Lyme disease or is there something else going on? And I always want to know how my practitioners get into the Lyme disease community. And so my guest today has a personal Lyme journey as well as a journey in utero with her child. So we're going to take a little time and talk about that as well. So super excited for this episode. I think it's going to be fabulous with lots of great information. So my guest today is Katie Tolley. Katie, welcome to the show. And thank you so much for taking the time to join me and just enlighten me and the listeners on everything surrounding pediatrics.
Thanks, Tanya. Thanks for having me. I was kind of excited when you reached out because so many people kind of don't realize that Lyme disease looks a lot different in kids than it does in adults. So it makes it difficult to diagnose. And if you haven't been around it, possibly lived it, you've gotten familiar with it, especially as a medical provider, it's really easy to overlook. And that's what happened with myself and my family. I had what was diagnosed as fibromyalgia for many years, starting actually the chronic pain issues and the gut issues and the anxiety and attention issues go all the way back to probably my teen years. Then throughout my 20s was when the fibromyalgia diagnosis showed up. I was in college and then I was in nursing school and just kind of trucking through and, you know, tried all the things. But it wasn't until actually I had my son and realized that after he was born, we started seeing some things in him that were a little different. He had some gut issues early on, nothing that would have been concerning or surprising. You know, all babies have a little bit of gut stuff going on. And then, you know, by the time he was three, even though he was speaking in paragraphs, bright kid, had trouble sitting still. But what three-year-old boy do we expect to sit still for too terribly long? So, you know, is it a problem? Is it not a problem? So long story short, we did realize that there were some attention type symptoms showing up for him in elementary school. But then later in elementary school, we started seeing more neurological symptoms, some speech regression issues and different things as he aged that were organizing issues, things that, like I said, look very much like ADHD in our kids, you know, executive functioning issues, difficulty falling asleep, difficulty transitioning from one activity to another, you know, can't pay attention to things that aren't real interesting, but can hyper-focus and hard to get away from things that are. And then he was in his teens and a friend recommended that we see a functional medicine doctor because we had been chasing symptoms for so long. And when we did, we realized not only did his symptoms go back pretty far. My symptoms went back decades and we realized that both of us had been dealing with Lyme disease and Josh's Lyme disease was probably a congenital Lyme disease. So that kind of really changed my perspective on medicine. I mean, at the time I was a nurse practitioner, I was a primary care provider. You know, I did all the things that primary care providers do. I was trying to specialize in taking care of kids with ADHD and anxieties and things like that, from the traditional medical perspective in the primary care setting. Then when
Wow,
we figured
that's,
out
I'm sorry, I'm going to stop you for just a second. Yeah, I like just so much is going in through my head right now because, I mean, okay, so we go back to even just you as a child, right, in school. So were you just considered this bad, unbehaved child or somebody who doesn't really care about school, doesn't really care about following directions? Like we could kind of overanalyze so many of the symptoms I think that maybe children have when there's a root to it. Like there's an underlying issue to I think everything that we have, right? Like there's a reason why we have ADHD, or there's a reason for everything, and oftentimes we never find that root problem. But that's interesting that so now you're starting to probably see a lot of things in your son that maybe you had way back then, and then there's this
Bingo.
correlation. Okay. And could you imagine, like, and I mean, I don't want to judge your parenting skills or even assume anything, but for me, as an example, I don't have children, but I grew up, my mom had an in-home daycare center. So I've been around a lot of kids. I was a huge part of my niece and nephew's life growing up. And could you imagine, like, punishing your children or constantly on them for doing bad or not caring or, not when you tell them the same thing 20 times and they still can't get it in their head? Like, oh my gosh. And then really, it's not the child's problem, it's Lyme disease.
Oh,
Like,
yeah, lived it for sure. You question your
that just the
parenting, you question
pain,
your child.
right. And so, let me just start off by saying to any of the listeners out there, if you're a parent and you're struggling with your children, please give yourself some grace. The
Absolutely.
topic of Lyme disease is so misunderstood. There's not enough information out there, and there is no parenting manual. Like, there's just not, And so, please don't judge yourself. Don't be hard on yourself. You're the one taking the time to listen to this episode right now. So, you are trying to be the best advocate for your children. We just don't always know what the right thing to do is. So, please just always, always, always give yourself grace. All right, with that being said.
Yes, I have the benefit of looking back on it now because my son is 23, but it took to 23 for him to be able to go to college, and he just started college. So I'll give you the bow on top, and then I'll go back and jump in just a little bit. But when you were talking about the parenting thing, my husband and I used to have a joke that our daughter didn't have the same challenges. So we were like, well, it can't necessarily. It's probably not us if she's kind of not having the same problems. It kind of we joked about that. But when Joshua was at his worst was when I actually stopped working for a little while. I had gone from primary care to working in a school wellness center, and then I kind of took a step back from working, realizing how much at-home support my son actually needed. And, he's an adult now, so I try not to get into, his story too much. It's something that I hope someday that he would tell because, he had a second grade teacher that looked at me and said, "You do kids, you're being humble. He's one of those smart ones. Go get him tested." And I find that our smart kids are our sensitive kids. A lot of the kids that I work with that end up with neuroimmune issues that look like ADHD and things along those lines, they end up being our smart kids are so sensitive to their immune system just seems to be sensitive. So that's where I was going with that. But when it came down to Josh, it was seeing his symptoms and then going back and thinking about what I had gone through in high school. And I wasn't the problem child. And this is the difference in boys and girls and what challenges they end up with, because boys from frustration are going to be a little bit more act outish. Girls are going to be a little bit more got to be a perfectionist. So they're going to come in and have that anxiety component because they're trying to fix the problem because it always gets internalized. And then doctors don't have great answers. So there's a lot of responsibility thrown back on the child or the patient when medications don't do what we expect them to do. So
Yeah,
the
and I
reason
think that
that
it
I made
kind of
the
is
flip I'm sorry. Go
No,
ahead.
we all have so much to say. No, I just wanted to throw in there, it's kind of the women are always known to be the more sensitive person, right? So that would make sense. We don't, we want to just be a perfectionist. And then the men
Exactly.
have this tougher outer shell, right? And so they
Sure.
just, well, this makes me mad. Instead of dealing with it or communicating or talking about it, I'm just going to act out, right? Like it makes perfect sense.
Walk away, or yeah, for sure. Yep. But because of what we went through, is when I kind of made the dive into functional medicine. I actually started working for the doctor that helped us figure out what was going on with our family for about a year or so. Then COVID entered the scene and everything changed. But long story short, I'm back seeing, I was seeing kids a little bit in between then and working with Well Rooted, but now working with Well Rooted, I have access to so many more families and I'm able to help so many more families. And we'll get into that later, but it was the personal journey. So when I work with my patients, I tell them, I've been in your seat. I'm not just the provider. I was the patient. I was the parent. I've raised a kid that has had these challenges from Lyme or the other diseases that we pick up, the co-infections, the babesias, the Bartonellas, the mycoplasmas, all the different things.
Yeah, and that's it. Usually when practitioners enter this Lyme world, it's kind of for a reason, right? Because I mean, I
Everybody has a
know I'm
story.
thinking, a practitioner, like they love a good challenge, right? Like that's why they got into medicine. They want to dig down and figure things out. But Lyme is just so challenging, or it can be. And so there's usually always a backstory to why somebody gets into this. And I truly believe, there's this phrase that has been thrown around for as many years as I can remember, you don't get it till you get it. And
Yeah.
so there are, I've worked with a couple of great practitioners. They never had Lyme disease. There's a little bit of a disconnect, I personally feel, right? When it comes to working with a practitioner that has never gone through it before. It just makes a difference. Not saying they can't treat you appropriately or anything like that. It just, there's a little bit more maybe compassion or empathy involved in the scenario because they know what you feel like. Like whether we can't describe it or explain it well enough, they know because they've lived it. So.
Agree. Yeah, it's different to deal with it in the office versus understanding and living what it's like 24/7.
Exactly. So I appreciate you for one getting into this field based on your own journey. Sorry, you and your son had to go through it, and then you had to pass it along to your son in utero because you didn't even know you had Lyme disease. It's
Right.
beyond frustrating.
Yeah,
So,
because of
but
all
you're
that good testing out there.
exactly. But you're well, your son is well. That is just amazing. So let's talk about, before the show, I was kind of trying to think of different things that maybe parents would want information on, right? And one thing that you mentioned was children can act differently, whether it's, a girl or a boy. So let's
Sure.
kind of just first dive into some of the symptoms that may be misdiagnosed as Lyme disease. I know that there can be many, and oftentimes, well, even as an adult, right? Like you could just have somebody with major gut issues or somebody with major migraines, and that could be their only symptoms, but
You're
it's actually
right.
coming from Lyme disease, right? So we are
Yep.
all so different, but it sounds even more so different when we're dealing with adults versus children. So if you could talk a little bit about what you see, in your practice as far as things that could actually be a Lyme symptom versus the typical, Lyme brain in an adult or the chronic fatigue or the pain or, all the kind of the normal things. What are some of the things you see in children?
So interestingly, in children, the common quote unquote things that people think of when they think of Lyme disease, the joint pain or the hip pain or things like that aren't necessarily pains, aren't necessarily the presenting symptom when it comes to kids. We see more neurological, more neurodevelopmental issues in kids. Like I was talking, my son presented with what looked like ADHD. And now I think of ADHD like a symptom more than an actual diagnosis. So I think of it as a symptom of neuroinflammation because of the amount of inflammation that Lyme disease can cause for anybody, but it really shows up in kids. And those neurological symptoms can look like attention issues. They can look like acting out. They can look like learning disabilities. It can look like anxiety and OCD. It can look like migraines, even seizures. There are some characteristic behaviors of some of your co-infections of Lyme as well. Babesia very often will present with night sweats that a lot of parents will think if we have night sweats or if we have night wakenings, that's because of parasites, which it may be, but it also could be Babesia. So Bartonella is very often misdiagnosed as like an oppositional defiant disorder because Bartonella will cause what we call rage type looking symptoms. So things like that that people kind of aren't necessarily looking for. Oh, and I think I mentioned to you before we got started, one of the red flags that I hear about is growing pains. Kids will have growing pains, not an unusual thing, but growing pains should be in spurts. They shouldn't be ongoing. So if we have growing pains that are ongoing for months and months or even years, we want to investigate to see if that's something a little bit deeper than just growing pains.
Okay, great. So when we're talking about growing pains, are there, there's no manual for raising children, right? But
Sure.
are there some guidelines as to different stages of their childhood where you should see some increased activity from growing pains?
Younger children do tend to grow quicker, but children, when they go through growth spurts, they go through growth spurts during those late tween, early puberty years. They go through growth spurts, just before that elementary school, that toddler to elementary age. But I mean, growing pains can be, quote unquote, at any time, but more characteristically, those developmental periods that we see the change from early childhood to middle childhood, from that childhood to adolescence, and then
Okay. And
those
that's a
developmental
great
stages.
enough guideline for sure. And so growing pains are normal, right?
Tell you
Maybe
another one that just came
months.
to mind.
Yes.
The kids who are having trouble keeping up with their friends because of fatigue, or they run around with their kid, with their friends playing sports, and it takes them longer to recover. Those muscles just don't have they don't have that endurance or stamina that we would expect kids to have. Kids should have a lot of energy. By nature, that's how God made kids. He gave us all the energy in childhood. My husband jokes that at 30, when my son came out, that's where all the energy went. So
Yeah,
kids should have energy. They shouldn't have sleep problems. They shouldn't have fatigue problems.
right. And that I'm sure, we can go down a whole nother path about this, but so it makes you wonder, like, why are some children maybe not into sports or not liking PE, right, in elementary
Absolutely.
school? Maybe
That
they
was my
don't
kid, and
know
we didn't
why.
realize it.
Yeah, we don't know why. We don't know,
They have trouble with those social interactions a lot of times as well.
Yeah, it just it is so heartbreaking to think what these children go through
It's
and just not
life-changing,
really
for
knowing.
sure.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously there's many symptoms that we can look out for when it comes to children and what might be going on with them. So, and this could be a loaded question too. But how would a parent know to kind of dissect further into, okay, is this really ADHD? Is my child acting, any of these, whatever symptoms they may be seeing in their child, when do they just be like, okay, this is what it is, right? Like it's in my genes, which I don't really think much is genetic, if you want my personal opinion, but again, I'm not a doctor. So when do people really need to kind of dive into this, because it can be exhausting. It could be financially draining, like so many things. And it's easy and hard to go down this rabbit hole of things. But of course, we want to do the best thing for our children. So if we have somebody listening here that Lyme is not even on the radar, they just have a child that is acting out, or maybe somebody knows of somebody and they share this episode with them, how does somebody know? What do you do? What would maybe be some of the first steps?
So, any known tick bites, but more than half the people don't remember a tick bite, and most people don't have the bullseye rash. You know
Right.
that as well as I do, I'm sure. So, when it comes to kids, it is kind of a challenging one. But if you see a kid getting worse when ADHD, you know, if you have a little bit, if you need a little bit of medicine and your ADHD is okay and you're maintaining and that's okay and that works for your family, fantastic. But think about the kids that are medicine hopping or they need more than one medicine or it's not just ADHD. Now it's anxiety. Oh, and now it's migraines. And there's just unexplained answers to multiple things starting to add up. Because what I say is, their glass gets full. So I say, I tell all of my patients and families this, think of a glass of water and the glass is the body. The water in the glass is inflammation or toxic load, somewhat interchangeable. Our kids that are showing all these symptoms, their glass is full and one little thing dropping in, one little stressor, one, you know, a little bit of mold exposure, and everything starts spilling out of the glass. And when you can't explain all of these different things, when it's, oh, they'll grow out of it. That's so, we get so many people that come to us with being told they'll grow out of whatever it is. And it's multiple symptoms. It's different skin reactions. It's different headaches or seizures even. I mean, there are so many things that parents are told they'll outgrow it. If you're being told they'll outgrow it, I would want to look a little bit deeper if it was me. You also asked about, you mentioned genetics. Here's my thing on genetics. Genetics certainly play a role, but genetics, I say, set the stage. The environment, the things dropping into your glass, they're going to open the curtain.
There you go. Yeah, that's perfect.
It's
There
about a
just is
third
a.
genetics. The rest of it is really environment. When we lower the water in the glass, your genetics don't have such a hard load and they're not going to be triggered.
Right. Okay. So that, I think that is kind of a great guideline how you just described that, Katie, is okay. So my child's got ADHD, whatever. Okay. And, you know, if you've listened to me or know me at all, you know I'm not a big pharma person, right? I'm a believer in everything natural, but there is a time and place for things when we need those additional supports. And so I'm never judging, and don't judge yourself if you have to resort to some of those things. So let's say you have your child on a low dose of ADHD medication, right? They're either staying stable or maybe they're needing a higher dose. That could maybe be an indication. But I really liked when you said that. Okay, so we got ADHD. We're dealing with that. Next year. Well, gosh, now they have a lot of headaches. Or, oh gosh, now maybe they have asthma. Or, oh gosh, maybe they have, you know, this irritation or allergic reaction to certain foods. Or when things start compounding, right? You know, when we're young and we're healthy, we have billions of stem cells in our body, right? And they work on everything that they need to do to repair our bodies. And so, for the most part, right, we can't classify everybody, but for the most part, children are resilient. They
Yes.
should be able to, you know, fight things off. They shouldn't every year or every other year be adding another ailment to their list. That's what happens when we age, right? So that is a key trigger to look for sure, is how many things are we adding to his list? So say you have even just a 7-year-old, how many symptoms do they have? How many diagnoses do they have? There's a reason for it. That is when you should kind of dive into, is this Lyme? Could this be Lyme?
I've got one more really good resource that we can put in your notes. You were telling me you told me we could share some different websites at the end. And one doctor that I have no doubt that you listened to when you went to ILADS recently was Dr. Richard Horowitz.
Oh,
And
yes.
Dr. Horowitz's website is called tiredoflyme.com. And if you go to his resources, he has a Lyme questionnaire, a Lyme symptom questionnaire. It's a great, I've had parents just when we're on calls look at that and they're just like, now I'm suspicious too.
Good. I'm glad you brought that up. Yes, and the listeners always know any key things we talk about, books or websites. I put all that information in the description of the episode. And yes, even I know that like Armin Labs, they have a resource and a checklist for, but not necessarily geared towards pediatrics. So that is good information, and we will for sure include that.
Yeah, I'll keep that up here and send it to you.
Awesome. So I know that. So speaking of genetics, right, and our DNA and our genes and stuff like that, there's a mutation that so many of us have. It's called MTHFR, and I'd like to tell you what we actually give a little, what do you call it, right? But it's kind
What
of the
we use
bad word,
that
right?
acronym
Yeah,
for multiple things.
exactly. So this, there's a couple of different variants to this mutation. You may have one, you may have both. You could get it from one of your parents or the other of your parents. And I know that it played a crucial role in my life long before I even got sick with Lyme disease, but I didn't even know I had it. And so I know a lot of people can struggle with that. How important is it in children to get tested for this? And then even maybe, do you know of what type of testing? How is the best way to get tested for it?
So the MTHFR variant gene is the full name is methyl tetrahydrate reductase, and I probably just said that wrong, but that's it in a nutshell. And it's a gene that creates an enzyme, and that enzyme helps with methylation. Methylation in the body is like a system of cellular metabolism, and it is really complicated. It took me years to even somewhat understand it, and there's no way I could possibly describe it without some sort of chart. But methylation plays a huge role in the body's ability to detox as well. So, or the MTHFR gene plays a huge role in detox as well as methylation. And when you think of if we have a methylation issue, think cellular metabolism, think the mitochondria. And the mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. It's going to run everything. So if things at a cellular level are slowed down, it's going to kind of start to stall everything and kind of gunk up the whole system. When it comes to detox and MTHFR, one gene variant is a little bit more troublesome than the other. Having more than one gene variant can be more problematic than having multiple can be more problematic than having one. The two gene variants known in MTHFR are the A1298C and the C677T. And you can have a variant of either. If you, most people know enough about genetics that you're getting one chromosome from each parent. And when you get that from each parent, they could or could not have that variant. So you could have one from one parent and not from the other. You could have one from each parent, which would be a double variant. So the C677T seems to be the one that's a little bit more problematic when it comes to detox. So we do know that the kids that have an A1298 are going to detox better than a kid that has C677T. So that being said, we just being aware of it makes a difference and kind of helps us support their detox channels. But at the same time, you asked me about testing. Testing for it can be done through traditional labs. Insurance sometimes will cover it, sometimes will not. I haven't gotten a lot of feedback recently about insurance not covering it. But you can also do methylation, then that would be just the MTHFR, the single, either the A1298 or C677C. And you can do a full methylation panel, which is about, there's about a dozen different genetics involved in methylation. So you might not have the MTHFR variant, but you could possibly have one of the others that could slow down methylation as well. I think the most important thing to know when it comes to having an MTHFR variant is about methylated B vitamins and folic acid. I think it's really important to avoid folic acid. Folic acid is one of the things that will actually fill that glass. At the proverbial glass I was talking about, because the body can't break it down and add that methyl group so that the body utilizes that folic acid as methylfolate. So when you're taking B vitamins, you need to make sure that the B vitamin B9 folate is not a synthetic folic acid because the body won't be able to process that. It needs to be a natural methylfolate. And then the challenge comes if you don't know about it and you're eating a lot of packaged foods with that are enriched with folic acid, which I think is a huge problem in our children because a lot of our packaged foods that our kids are getting are fortified with folic acid. And we now know that 50 to 60% of the population could possibly have that gene variant.
Yeah, and that was the variant that I had. I believe it was the C. I couldn't methylate and I couldn't detox. I'm happy to say I does not register in my blood work anymore after a DNA test that I did, which was pretty exciting. But
Interesting. So you had a dirty gene, not a gene. So that's Dr. Ben Lynch's thing. He talks about how you
I
can
love
be
that book, by
born.
the way.
Yeah, it's right behind me. You can be born with a MTHFR variant, or you can have an MTHFR gene that ends up getting quote unquote dirty, and then it doesn't work effectively and efficiently in those detox channels and that methylation. And that's probably what happened to you.
Interesting. Okay, yeah,
Could
I
be.
don't
I
know.
don't
I
know
don't
everything,
know
but
enough about it. I just know I'm pretty confident in saying that that played a huge role in me losing a baby in utero at 5 months. I
it very
believe
well could have.
it played a big role in that, and that was kind of how I dove into even discovering that I had that. But
Yeah, I
anyways,
really wish
okay,
they take
so
folic acid out of prenatal vitamins or maybe methylfolate.
Right. So back to the testing real quick. So that's great information to know if it's something that your primary doctor can do with regular labs. I would say 1,000,000%, why not do it, right? It's just a simple blood draw. So there's no
Sure thing.
reason not to do it if it's not going to be costing us out of pocket. I know that, it can be a struggle with, do we want to pay for proper testing? Do we want to take that testing money and put it towards treatment? Like it's, we really have to allocate our financial resources when we're going through a journey like this. And so for sure, if you have the capability of getting tested for it, the more knowledge is power, right? So
For sure.
get
My daughter
information
asked me
there.
this week about how expensive is health, and I said, "Babe, your health is priceless. What do you need? What's going on?"
Where is this question coming from? You're
Yeah.
scaring me. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so now I know that in your practice you do not utilize antibiotics, but if we can just kind of quickly touch on that, from my understanding, a lot of children, will be put on antibiotics. And if you've been listening to me for any amount of time, you know that I am not a fan of antibiotics unless you have a fresh infection or everything else has failed. But it should never be your number one choice for many, many reasons when it comes to chronic Lyme disease. Again, that's coming from a Lyme patient, not a doctor. But I know, Katie, that you kind of feel along the same lines. And so when you initially have a bite, the standard is doxycycline. But I've heard a lot that I believe it's age 9 and under that doxy is not safe for them. Can you
Yeah,
tell us
around.
why? And also, if it's not safe, then what do they take?
So yeah, right around that age is when they recommend using other options for doxy if they're younger than 8 or 9. Older than that, there are less concerns, and a lot of it has to do with the side effect of teeth staining. So in the past, but there are some doctors that will still do that and take that risk, and some parents don't mind that risk, and maybe that risk wouldn't be a problem for some families. But a lot of doctors or providers that do use antibiotics that don't use doxy would use usually amoxicillin. A lot of patients that come to me have either been on doxycycline or amoxicillin, and even kids younger than 8 and 9 have been on doxycycline, and not all of them have had the problems. As far as the side effects, the problem they actually have is that they still have Lyme disease, even though they've already been on the antibiotic.
Right. So pretty much the only reason why is for the teeth staining.
I'll be honest, I don't, I haven't looked at, I haven't worked with doxycycline in so long. I do
Okay.
believe that's the primary thing, and it could also have to do with safety testing, but I'll be honest with you, it's not something I've looked up recently because I don't
Okay.
use it. But a lot
Gotcha.
of it did have to do with teeth staining.
Gotcha. Okay. So doxy or amoxicillin. Okay. So you use herbs in your practice.
We do.
So let's kind of talk about, well, I guess all the stuff, right? Like, so how do you initially kind of start treating a patient? Like how do you look for it? I'm assuming you're going to do labs, maybe. Do you do muscle testing out of your clinic? Like, how do you get that diagnosis? Because probably like you with a lot of Lyme literate practitioners, by the time the patient comes to you, they've exhausted everything, right? Like and now they're to the point where they don't really even like doctors. They don't trust many. They don't, they're questioning everything. And so I'm sure that that puts you in a harder position to be able to convince them, right? Like there are doctors who know how to deal with this kind of stuff. But how what's kind of like your protocol? Do you kind of build up their immunity? Do you go for killing things? How do you work that?
So, yeah, it's really important to build up immune systems, make sure detox channels are open because these kids are dealing, like I said, the glass is full. We've got to lower the water in the glass before we throw antimicrobials at them because then everything's going to continue to spill out of the glass because those antimicrobials are really going to wake things up. And we want to make sure that when we wake up and kill off these bugs, they're getting out of the body. So detox channels being open is always a priority. If people are listening or familiar with Herxheimer symptoms, I find that that's the difference between whether or not you're going to have a Herxheimer symptom and not. And some people are going to Herx either way. I'm not of the realm that you have to Herx to get better. I don't, my goal is for you not to Herx. My goal is for the detox channels to be open, the inflammation to have been worked on. We're working on balancing that gut. And once we do that, we make sure that one, my rule is you got to be pooing every day to be on an antimicrobial. If not, I'm worried you're going to Herx, and if you Herx, then you're not going to have trouble believing that you're going to get better, and you're going to have trouble trusting me. So my goal is not for you to Herx. So when I start, I think about boosting immune function. There's a couple of different products I use that are specific to help boost immune function. Depends, and I kind of go back and forth myself between which protocol I'm going to use for which kid because I don't just pull the Lyme protocol out and put it in a chart. I think about what's going on with the kid. Is the child young enough to, do they need tinctures? Would they prefer to swallow pills? If one of the products that I want to use is only capsules, is this a kid that I can get to open up and put their capsule in a drink or in applesauce or in something to take? Or is that going to be a barrier to care? One of the things I say is kids are like trees. You can walk around them one way, you might not get there. You might have to turn around and walk around them the other way. So I gotta have more than one, option in my arsenal because kids are like trees. They're not gonna move. If they're not gonna take something, sometimes they're not gonna take something.
Right. So,
And
can I
we have to
stop you
work
real
on
quick
that.
right
You
there?
sure can.
So, when it comes to giving these pills or tinctures to children,
Yeah, it's a
any
challenge.
tips? Like any.
So one of the things that I struggle with recommending, but it really is the easiest way to do it, is to have some sort of little shot glass of juice or something along those lines, but it needs to be a juice with a lot of flavor. It needs to be a pomegranate and always organic, and I'm not a big proponent of a lot of juice, but for this purpose, it's useful because it's going to mask flavors the best if it's a stronger t flavor like a grape juice. I was working with a mom recently, and she's like, "Be careful with the grape juice." We went to the dentist after using the grape juice, and they're like, "It's staining the teeth." And I'm like, "I can't win."
Right, yeah.
But using something like that can be helpful. There are some kids that are thrilled to have their parent draw what they put in that little shot glass that they've opened up and just put into water into a syringe and put it in the back of their mouth so it bypasses the taste buds and they're good to go. So sometimes the syringe is the best answer, even though some parents think that's a struggle. Sometimes it's actually the best option if you want to bypass those taste buds. But the applesauces are not always a bad idea. Smoothies are always a great idea because you can change up the smoothie. It's not the same thing every day. And you got to be careful of putting it in the one food that they'll always eat because inevitably they're going to stop eating it.
Funny you say that. So, me as an adult, right, during my journey, I did a lot of tinctures. I prefer tinctures because I think it's easier to dose, right? We can
Agreed.
undo more, do less. We can modify it more so than a pill
My
or a
favorite is
capsule.
tinctures.
So, but some of them were pretty darn
Herbs
nasty.
taste like dirt.
So, I would put them in. I love orange juice. I grew up drinking orange juice. I love my orange juice. And I would put it in a little shot glass of orange juice. I no longer like orange juice,
I'm
which
so
is not
sorry.
necessarily a bad thing, right? But it ruined me. Like, I cannot, it, no orange juice tastes normal anymore, right? Like, what it's
Great.
supposed to
Yeah,
taste like. It's a little
that's
bit
the
of
challenge.
PTSD in my brain. And I'm like, nope, hard pass, of course, unless You want to throw a little champagne? I'm
I was
happily
going to
drink a
say mimosa
mimosa,
sundae, whole different
not a
ball game.
problem, but just straight orange juice. Yeah, I'm 100% out on that. So yeah, so it's a challenge, but still those are some great little tips that, parents could try, just different
And
things.
I'm
Get
going to throw this one out
creative.
there. I'm going to give you the tough love speech. Be the parent. Don't let the 4-year-old run the family. And that's really hard when you've got a sick kid. But they will appreciate it when they're better and you were the one that got them there. Speaking of a mom of a 23-year-old who is now thriving, they will appreciate it.
Yes, I love that. And we do need tough love a lot in this journey and then just in life in general.
So let me give you my other thing real quick, not to interrupt, but I say we're going to peel an onion when I work with my patients. So where there's layers and layers and layers, but we're going to cry as we peel those layers because it's an onion. That's what onions do.
I love that. And lime is like peeling an onion. Never thought
Over and over
about,
and
yeah,
over.
I mean, who likes to peel an onion? Put the little swimmer goggles on or something, anything to not cry. Like I could just be standing next to somebody cutting an onion and I'm, tears are just rolling down my face. It's crazy. So kind of along that line of, the tough love, do at what point, at what age do you actually involve your child's voice?
Every age.
So when you, okay, good answer. When you're going through this journey, do we want to trick our children? Do we
Absolutely
want
not.
to
Never.
tell them, no, there's nothing, there's no medication in that thing. What are you saying? Right. Let's talk being you being a pediatric nurse practitioner for so many years, right? Like this is what you do. You work with children, not even just necessarily people that had Lyme years ago, right? But oftentimes we wonder how much of a voice do we should we let our child have when it comes to their health? And I think the more information, the better, right? Because then they feel like mommy's not just making me do this, right? I chose. Mommy gave me an option, this or that. I got to choose because I'm a big girl, right? Like I think that can be very powerful in a journey like this.
100%. So golly day, I like to empower my kids with choices. Like when we do gut testing and we find out that we don't have enough short chain fatty acids or digestive enzymes, instead of sending them a short chain fatty acid powder that stinks to put in a smoothie, I'm going to send them an article about short chain fatty acids with a list of foods, and that child gets to look at that list of foods and decide what they want to start incorporating in their diet. That's empowering. Same with the digestive enzymes and the bitter foods. I'm going to send you a list of all these bitter foods. Now, I've had some moms go, yep, not going to happen. Just send me the digestive enzymes. We're just going to do them. And I'm like, no problem at all. And you can do both. You can do bitter foods some days, and then there are days that you're not getting a lot of bitter foods in. You can do the digestive enzymes. So, what was the beginning of your question again? Lyme brain.
Yeah. Well, we both have so many things running through our head because we want to get so much crammed into this episode. At least I feel that way.
Yes.
I was just saying simply, how much of a voice do we want to let them have? So we want to
Oh,
give them options,
yes.
right? We want to let
I
them
have a big
be
opinion on that.
empowered.
That's why I
Okay,
wanted to get back
perfect.
to that part. I think the kids should absolutely always know because kids have a huge imagination. It's the younger, the better, as far as imagination, right? We don't want them wondering or making up reasons as to why they're sick or worrying that they're sick and they're going to die. And that's why we're not talking to them because that's the first place kids are going to go. So we're decreasing their anxiety by sharing with them at their level what's on. Now, when I do an intake appointment and I've got a kid who's got a lot of school issues or behavior issues and things like that, I don't want them listening to all the history that mom's giving me because just listening to that over and over and over is very difficult for a child. It's difficult for a mom to continue to live it and share it. It's difficult for the child to continue to be, they feel like they're bad. And my mother-in-law saved my child's life many, many years ago when she told me busy is not bad. And that's so true. These kids, our ADHD kids, they're not bad kids, they're busy kids. Our kids who can't sit still, but our kids that are sick, they're not bad, they're sick. And I have that conversation very frequently with my parents. And I think it's really important for these kids to understand. You don't need to necessarily tell them why they're taking every single supplement unless they want to know. But I think the more they learn, we're teaching them to take care of themselves for the next 70 years.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better, and I couldn't agree more. For sure, I think that there are, and I also like that when you're doing the intake, right? Like you got to kind of be real and raw when you're talking to your practitioner about what your child is going through, like what your concerns are as a parent. But then again, you don't want, your child sitting there listening. Well, gosh, if I'm thinking, if I'm all those things, I'm really a bad person, right? Like that's the last thing we want to do. And then also what you said, so if let's say, the scenario is your child started out with ADHD, right? Like a lot of times that can give them anxiety as well, right? Like if a child is a little worrywart, if they're going through this journey and they're knowing that they're having to do all these weird different things that their friends don't have to do,
That's
right?
the hard
And I
part.
have to eat certain foods, and mom makes me take this pill, and I have to go to sleep, and all this stuff. If you're not informing your child to a certain degree, I feel that you're adding anxiety into their world. And that's what we're trying to get rid of, is that anxiety. So we always want to, and correct me if I'm wrong, Katie, but we always want to reiterate over and over. We are our words, we are our thoughts, right? And so we want to positively reinforce that you're not sick, you're taking this. You're taking this because we're going to get you well, right? Like it's always about the end goal is so you can be all better and well and go run around and be just like all your friends are, right? Like we want to use positive reinforcements instead of because you're sick, you need to take this, right? Well, you have a little bug in you, right? You have a little bug and it's really hard to get out of your body. So we need to take these things so we can get rid of this bug so you can forget all about that you ever felt this way, whatever it takes. But choose your words wisely and choose your plan appropriate according to your child and the age of your child when it comes to incorporating their voice into their healing journey.
Agreed.
So let's kind of go back a little bit to herxing. There's a lot of talk even just in the adulthood within the Lyme community. So what exactly is herxing, right? Like my explanation is always every symptom I ever thought I had is just exasperated by a million, right?
Whatever your
And
worst symptom is, it's going to get worse.
yeah, and if I stub my toe 20 years ago, that toe's probably going to hurt too. Like it just everything comes out, right? So what is it from? Is it from overkilling? Or is it because you're not detoxing appropriately? Or is it a
I think it
combination
may
of
have a lot
both?
more to do with detox. And so, yeah, it can be that we like for with herbs, for example, we go up on herbs, especially with children, very slowly. Because if I say 10 drops twice a day is our max dose according to weight, your max dose according to your body might be 6 drops twice a day. So if we start going up and things are fine, we're pooing every day, we're doing detox baths, we're taking the supplements that we need that help open up detox channels and decrease all the inflammation and have binders and all the things. But if those symptoms are getting a little bit worse, we'll back down on those herbs because that might mean we're at max dose for you.
For you, yeah, because we're all individual. Okay.
And herbs are just so amazingly potent. Sometimes it doesn't take as much as you think it takes. I've had kids who that we think we're going to be on 15 drops of something twice a day, and they're on three. And they're, but their symptoms start to subside over time. And it does take time. It certainly does take time.
Okay. So is that kind of like that happy medium? So we're going up slowly, right?
Absolutely.
And
So that we can
I,
recognize that max dose if it's not where we assume it is.
yes. And I know for like me, the recommendations that, I give for adults is when you're going to start something new, a handful of things, start one thing at a time. If we're going to react to something, we need to know what we're reacting to. And when I say that, move up slowly, I always say it, give it at least 3 days and
3 to 4 days
then add
is my
one more
magic number.
drops, right? Or yeah, because you want to kind of see, is that when you say slow with children, does that align with that, or is it even slower than every 3 days?
Most kids, I'm going to do 3 to 4 days. Depends on what product or what protocol we're on. Sometimes I'm going to put you on one herbal blend and it's going to be 2 weeks before I put you on the next, or a full week before I put you on the next.
Okay.
So it depends on the child. It depends on what I'm treating. It also depends on the child's sensitivity level. If it's a kid who's got a lot of allergies and is dealing with a mast cell activation issue, I might go up even slower and I will probably cap that dose a lot lower as well.
Okay. And so when you're looking for things, because I would think that you would want to, instead of if they're having issues at their max dose for that child, you want to go down just a little bit maybe, right? So
Absolutely.
how do you tell what types of symptoms could you be listening for from your child, right? Because you're not going to ask your child, well, are you herxing today, right?
Yeah.
What are you going to ask your child, and what are you going to look for in them as a parent to know if they're herxing, if maybe their pathways aren't open, or if this is too strong?
So you need to be really familiar with what their primary symptoms are. If you've got a child whose primary symptom is headaches, the headaches are probably going to get worse. If you've got a kid with a sensitive stomach or allergies, you're going to see those symptoms increase. For my son, it was fatigue. It took me a while to realize because I'm thinking, oh, herxes are stomach aches and headaches. My early years in functional medicine,
We don't
that's
know
what
what we
herxes
don't
are.
know.
Well, and that's why you asked the question, but everybody's herx is going to look a little different according to what their symptoms are. So if I tell my parents whatever their worst symptom is, that's what I want you to keep an eye out for. Because if we're sleeping extra or if we're acting out more, that's a big one. Big one is acting out, especially with kids.
Okay. That's perfect. So, yeah, pick your top two, three, five, how many ever. And this is a great time to realize how powerful journaling can be, right? Whether
For
you're a
sure. And that's why
computer
I like Dr.
person.
Horowitz's symptom checklist, because we can do that multiple times through our treatment and start to see that regression.
Yes, you've got to track things. You've got to track things. So
Very
again,
helpful.
we'll put that resource in the description of this episode. And I mean, create a form on your computer. Make a form with a piece of paper and a pen. Like, it does not matter, right?
Just grab your
Just
favorite
keep
notebook.
track. Yes. And that's going to be an important thing to put on there, is your child's top symptoms, so that you can be readily aware of when they're starting a protocol, of where their tipping point is. Right. You'll
Yes.
be able to tell, because you're going to need to be their voice, because shoot, as an adult, we don't even know what the heck we're doing in our journey. So certainly a child doesn't. We need to be, of course, ask questions and all of that. But journaling is just such an important tool for anybody going through any type of a chronic illness, right? Are we reacting to certain foods? Are we, what exactly is our problem? And it's a very overwhelming journey for the patient that has Lyme brain, whether it's an adult or a child, and then just a parent. You are so consumed by the worry of your child being sick.
And
It's
that's for
hard
sure.
to keep track of our emotions and our thoughts and different things. Things that normally would, be a no-brainer, you may forget because your mind is so consumed with so many other things going on with your child. So writing things down is so important. They don't need to be perfect. You're the only one who needs to be able to read them.
Good advice.
So, when it comes to obviously to children, when and I know everybody is different, right? Do you ever do, or are you strictly for this or against it, or kind of mix it in the middle of pulsing certain things and are rotating things? If you're going to say, okay, I've got these two things that I think both would be really good for A, B, and C, not going to put them on both, but what I am going to do is I'm going to do this for a month, and then I'm going to do this for a month. Do you rotate things out? Do you pulse things? And I know usually when you hear the word pulse, it's kind of correlated to antibiotics, right? But I believe a lot of people do pulse herbs as well.
Yes, for some things we do. If we're treating pandas and the strep that creates the whole pandas diagnosis, rotating herbs sometimes is useful. I don't do as much rotation of herbs with Lyme disease. And I also get very hesitant to rotate herbs when a kid's doing really, really good and getting better because
Don't mess with a good thing.
I have messed up a good thing, and you rarely get back to that good thing. You might get 8/10 of the way there, but we ne this one kid, I never got her back there. And I was like, the next time I was at conference, I went up to all my favorite mentors. And I'm like, tell me about rotating. When they're like, oh, just don't. And I'm like, okay.
Just
So
don't.
there's definitely a time and a place for it. And it definitely is more talked about when we're treating something like the strep from pandas versus Lyme disease. But it
Okay.
also, if there are different symptoms that we're dealing with, we might different things based on symptoms. But as far as straight up antimicrobials for the infection, I usually am not pulsing them.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know. And so, I mean, I have so many topics that surround, children. There's just so many things that we can talk about. But before we end, I want to make sure to kind of touch on the whole, and we did a little bit earlier in the show of, your, they have fatigue. They don't want to play sports, right? Is it lack of interest? Is it, what is it? Do you, what do you see within your community that might be helpful for parents to try to maneuver the whole, you're different than your friends. You just are, right? You have Lyme disease. You're battling an illness right now. You can't do everything that your friends do. And I know for me as an adult, when I was going through my journey, if there was ever, a holiday event and somebody may have just had a cold or maybe getting a cold, no, Tanya is banned, right? Because I could not be around anybody that was sick because my immune system was so weak. I would pick up everything. And a typical 2 or 3 day cold would be a non-typical 2 or 3 weeks or a month long cold. And so it was just exasperated in me. And so I'm sure, a lot of kids are sick, right? You take them to daycare, you take them to school, everybody has runny nose. That's why everybody gets sick, And so what are your thoughts or tips or any type of little pep talk you can give us on how we can explain these things or help our children maneuver through without, ruining their self-esteem or making them feel like they're not good enough or they're just different, they're weird. There's cliques all over, especially when we become into junior high, right? Like you got this clique of friends over here and you got this clique. I mean, it's just the way it is. And oftentimes it could be a little brutal on children. And when we're battling something like this, we are different. We're all different anyways, but we're a lot extra
This
different
is a very
when we're
alienating
dealing.
disease. It really is
Yes.
because people don't understand it.
Yeah.
And from our personal journey, I kept trying to share the information about what Lyme disease does to the brain, what Lyme disease does to the nervous system, what POTS syndrome is, why the fatigue is there, and all of these things. And they just kept going back to, well, if he's tired, can't he just sit here and take this test? And I'm like, there's brain fatigue involved as well. So I think the hardest part for these kids is not knowing or understanding they're sick. It's other people understanding what their illness really is doing to their life. The people that are important in their life, the teachers, the coaches, those people that sooner or later they just don't understand and they kind of pull back and they don't support the kids
It's a
the
lot of
same.
work.
It is a lot of work and they don't understand. And a lot of times it looks like these kids are just defiant or they're choosing not to do something or they don't want to do their assignments when it really is that their brain isn't giving them the support they need to get it done. And the people around them don't understand that. So helping support your child where they are, when they're little and they're going to birthday parties and they don't understand the whole gluten and dairy thing. If we're going to birthday parties every week, we got to really pull back on that. If we're going to birthday parties once every few months, not as big a deal. You deserve a treat sometimes if you don't have true celiac or if you don't have a true allergy. I tell my kids, my goal for every one of my kids is to be able to enjoy pizza with their friends when they're a teenager. That's my goal. You're probably never going to be eating it every day, but I want you to be able to enjoy it without it coming back to bite you. That's my goal for you. The water in your glass to be low enough that you can hang out with friends and you don't have to be that kid that was the sick kid, because my kid was known as the sick kid. And it is hard and it's very alienating. And I don't know that I have fantastic advice except from help your child understand that they're sick, that this isn't a choice that they're making, because so many people think that they're just choosing to be defiant, but it's really fatigue. Or they're not, Lyme kids have such a hard time with recall. So writing is difficulty. Trying to answer a question, everything gets discombobulated in their head and they can see the answer behind their eyeballs, but they can't get it past their tongue. And that's a very common symptom.
Yeah. No, I think you offered some really great insight for parents for sure. And I think that we kind of go back to letting your child have a voice. That the more that we can share with our child about what this bug, right? If we did call it whatever you want to call it, that okay, this is what you have. What this bug is, it's going in your brain. So, sometimes when I might get mad at you because I told you to clean your room and you forgot. You're like, well, you didn't tell me to clean my room. Well, it's not because you have a bad memory. It's because you have a bug and your bug is disrupting your brain right now. That is why we take these medicines so that we get rid of that bug and your brain works. And so the next time I tell you to clean your room, you're really going to get in trouble when you don't, right? Because, and I think that that's a huge thing of being able to share and have these conversations with your children. And what age is appropriate? I don't know. We're all so different, right? But
Yeah, you
at
really
any
got to.
age that when they can converse, you can figure out your own parenting style on what you want to talk
And
about.
your highly anxious child is the one that you give bullet points to. You don't give all the details. You give them the information they need. You're sick, it's going to affect your brain. But getting into a lot of the neurology or the neuroscience or for the young kids, that's I don't think that's necessarily an important part. Your teenagers, whole different ball game.
Okay.
I especially with our smarter kids, because I tell them, let's turn this into a science experiment, and here's what I want you to do and report back to me. I tell some kids when they don't want, when they're really having a hard time giving up gluten and dairy, I'm like, prove me wrong.
I love
Prove
it.
to me that you can tolerate this. But we usually find that it adds water to the glass and it's noticeable.
I love that. And what you said earlier is, a lot of younger kids, there's a lot of birthday parties, right? And what are we having? We're having that cake and the ice cream and the dairy and the gluten and all this stuff. And so, yes, things in moderation. Again, every child is different, right? And so that is where tracking and journaling is really going to play a big role in your healing journey for your child, because maybe your child is not responding negatively to gluten or to dairy or to whatever it is. Is it a regular thing? No, we dramatically need to change our diet when we go through this journey. We just do. But the reason I'm saying that is because maybe your child can go and have a piece of cake twice a month, right? Maybe it is a weekly thing. If your child doesn't appear sensitive to it, then maybe it can be. If they're extremely sensitive, they're a child. You have to let them do it. But if you can't accommodate them based on their body response, like you said, a science project with the teenagers, I love that idea. Why not bake your own gluten-free cake at home with your child and make it a special mommy child day, daddy child day? We're going to learn how to do this because I really love cake and this is our special day, instead of I can't go to this birthday party because I'm sick, right? Like, find ways to reward their journey and not let them lose their whole childhood because of an illness. We're creative. We're adults. We can get really creative when it comes to how to manage the parenting thing when you're dealing with Lyme disease.
It's a tough one,
It is for
which
sure.
is why you and I met through that the group, the Facebook group, Parents of Children with Lyme Disease.
Yes. A Lyme friend of mine, Lori Roach, she was on my podcast many years ago, And she created this Facebook page, and I think it's fabulous. There's a lot of Facebook groups out there for people with Lyme disease, but this one really targets the children with Lyme disease, which unfortunately we're seeing so much more of this than, we ever
It's
did. And
really underdiagnosed.
maybe it's because it's underdiagnosed, right? It's not
Sure.
necessarily new cases, right? They're just really figuring out the root problem of it. So, well, Katie, this has really just been, I think it was a fabulous hour that we just spent together. We touched on so many different topics. I think you offered some really great advice and some good tips for any of the parents out there that are listening to how to kind of navigate through this with their children. It's tough. It's not easy. And as a
It's a
parent,
journey. It's
yes, you need to make sure that you take some time for yourself. You take some time to kind of step away, whether it's a few hours alone where you don't have to think about what do I need to do for my child first? Because again, right, if your cup is full, there's not much more you can take, right? And just like when they say, when you're flying, put your oxygen on first. We cannot help others
100%.
if our cup is empty. And that really does go down to you as a parent treating your child as well. So remember to take time for yourself. Always, always give yourself grace. This is your child. I know that you want nothing but the best for them. So you are doing the best that you know how, and you're going to continue to learn along your journey, and you'll learn by your mistakes, you'll learn by your wins. But be sure that you celebrate every little win yourself and then also with your child. So, Katie, I know that you're with Well-Rooted Pediatrics out of Illinois, but they have some different locations. How can the listeners find you, reach out to you? Do you guys practice in different states? Do you do telemed? Tell us all the stuff.
So, yep, that's actually how I work with Well-Rooted. We are based in Illinois. We have two pediatric offices in Illinois. We have an adult functional medicine office with IV therapies also in Crystal Lake, Illinois. And we recently nearby opened a women's functional medicine. All of that is in person. Myself and a few other providers provide telehealth specifically through functional medicine, telehealth, nothing acute medicine wise. Everything telehealth is functional medicine. Acute would have to be in office. But Lyme disease and chronic Lyme and things like that are, where the telehealth functional medicine options are a perfect option for families. So myself and a couple other providers provide telehealth and I think we're up to probably more than 15 states, but not quite 20 now, where we
Oh,
practice.
fabulous.
Yes, I personally am licensed in 9 states, waiting on Texas, and that'll be 10. I think I might kind of hold it there. That's a lot. And then my other providers are in multiple other states too. We have to be in states where nurse practitioners can practice independently. So a lot of people are like, please come to my state, please come to my state. Some states don't allow nurse practitioners to practice independently. They have to have a collaborating physician. So in those states, it's much harder for us to kind of work there because we need to be. I'm licensed in each individual state where we offer telehealth through my services. And the telehealth appointments right now are about a month out if you call in. I can't name all of the states, but if you were to check on our website, which is wellrootedpediatrics.com or mywellrooted.com has all of them. And our Instagram has a lot of information as well. But our phone number at the office is 815-322-9300. So we have new patient coordinators that are waiting for phone calls from people to discuss whether or not they're a good candidate for telehealth with us, whether we're in a state where we can provide telehealth for them. In a telehealth appointment, we can order labs. And we order specialty testing. We look at gut testing, we look at toxin testing, we look at tick-borne testing. There's a couple of different companies that we use for specialty testing for Lyme, because as you know, traditional labs like Quest and LabCorp don't have good accuracy when it comes to diagnosing Lyme, which is what happened to myself for false negative tests over the years, but obviously they weren't. But neither here nor there. So we can do the testing and then we provide treatment plans that last at least 6 to 8 weeks. But when we find, if we're fine that we're dealing with Lyme, usually that treatment plan gets extended a little bit longer than that because usually we're on herbs for, you got to think about how long you have had the illness, and it can sometimes take an equal amount of time to work on treating the illness. If patients have been on antibiotics in the past and failed antibiotics as far as resolution, then we've also got to deal with some of the side effects from those antibiotics and rebuild that immune system in the gut. So sometimes it takes a little bit longer for some people than it does others. So that's why we work on treatment plans so people understand that there is a length of commitment involved here. One of my favorite things about our treatment plans, we have wellness coordinators that help you figure out how to get that supplement into your child or how to navigate the gluten-free, dairy-free, or anti-inflammatory diet and how to add in more healthy fats and proteins. Our wellness coordinators are a real benefit to our treatment plans. So I don't have to constantly be the person that is the only person you're hearing from. You've got other support. They're kind of like your treatment plan coach through the your treatment plan. So it's nice that we have that support staff to work with our patients as well. So,
I
yep.
love that.
I've been with
Yes,
Well-Rooted
yes.
Pediatrics for almost a year now, and it's one of the best decisions I've made as far as career and how I'm able to reach out and help kids.
Oh my gosh, it sounds fabulous. So, yes, listeners, we will have all the information, the website in there. You can go on, you can call, you can check on their website to see if they can do telehealth in
Follow
whatever
us on
area that you're
Instagram.
in.
We have a great social media team that tries to keep you entertained. So
On
check
Instagram.
out
Okay,
our Instagram.
perfect. I
Yeah, for
love
sure.
that. And then we'll put, the Dr. Horowitz site up there, resources, symptoms that you can look for in your children, just all the information that we'll talked about today, we'll be sure to put in that information for you. So, Katie, truly, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join me and share all this information, but mostly just loving these little kids back to good health. Like it takes a special someone to do that. And so I appreciate what you're doing for all the families out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. The days that I get goosebumps because I just hear he's doing so much better. And then there's the days that they're like, his tics are worse. What's going on? And I'm like, oh, what are we going to do? And we've got to investigate. So
Yeah.
it's challenging, but it's amazingly rewarding.
Exactly. It is a roller coaster for all of us in this journey, the patient, the parent, the everybody, the
For sure.
practitioner, right? But the end of this, the other side of it is truly amazing. And that's the rewarding part of the job.
You're
So,
saving their life because they're only going to get sicker.
yes, exactly. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks so much for having me.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.